Bring the House Transportation Committee to order. President Representative Dugan, Johnson, and Faircloth, and myself. As I mentioned to Representative Dugan, I think the point of diminishing returns on presentations has reached its point, so this is the last overview and presentation by DOT, and as I mentioned before, we're actually going to take Thursday and possibly Tuesday off and have the Marine Highways back in here for a meeting and then start working on legislation. So thank you all for suffering through this. I think we got a lot of good information, though, mm-hmm. over the last couple of weeks, few weeks. But our last presenters are with Northern Region. If you could identify yourself and your position for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Titus, and I'm the Northern Region Director for DOT. And I hope your attrition rate doesn't have anything to do with the Northern Region. I'd also like to introduce Howard Thies in the audience, and his sidekick, Frank. Howard is our Northern Region Director for Maintenance and Operation. Thanks for, I assume you want me to?
Yeah, please continue.
Keep on going, okay. Thank you for inviting me to visit with you today. I am your Northern Region Director because I am part of the state workforce, and my goal here today is to inform you who the Northern Region is, what we do, and some of the challenges that we face as we do those things. But first, I'd like to give just a little background on myself. I'm a registered professional civil engineer. I have about over 30 years of experience in engineering in Alaska. My folks brought me to Alaska in 1959 as a 10-year-old kid. I didn't have much choice. It's one of the best things they probably ever did for me. I'm a Lathrop High School graduate, a UAF graduate, Vietnam veteran, and I've worked as a consultant, for a consultant. I've been a general contractor and worked for general contractors. And I've also worked for a number of different public agencies. And that brings a full circle of experience of being self-employed, private sector, and public sector experience to the table as the regional director. I hope all of you have some of the handouts that we've provided. And I hope those serve as reference. I would encourage you to keep them. It's good reference material. And if you ever need any updates to any of that information, please get a hold of us, and we'll be glad to supplement what you have. There's a color presentation, a PowerPoint presentation that I'm not going to read from it. I'm just going to go through it, use it as a backdrop for the discussion today, and there will probably be some slides in there that you've seen previously through the other presentations, but I thought they were important to make a point. But there is one thing that I think summarizes our vision and what we do at the DOT, and that's on slide 2, and I will read that, and it's vision, the department that plans, designs, constructs, operates, and maintains quality, safe, efficient, sustainable transportation and public facilities that meet the needs of Alaska's diverse population, geography, and growing economy. I think that sets a tone for our role as DOT to identify transportation projects, needs, priorities, make investment decisions in the different types of projects that we're going to have. We have challenges, lots of challenges. We have limited resources, both in people and in funding. We have expanding responsibilities. The roads and airports are becoming more complex, that sort of thing. We have more and more regulations to deal with as it relates to stormwater pollution and air quality. You probably have all seen that slide of the curve that goes almost vertically after a certain point in time. Inflation, the environment, it's a challenge. And one of the challenges that I'm working on with our folks, I'm challenging them to be more, take more control of their scopes of the projects, design, and schedule and budget. So we're going to be more conscious of that than maybe before. I don't want to say that other folks weren't, but it's one of the thrusts of my tenure. The next slide, you've probably seen this one before, but it's an interesting slide. It puts into perspective the size of the northern region. I'd like to say that the size of the northern region is larger in Texas. I think we pick on Texas because Texas picked on Alaska when they were here during the pipeline. But anyways, it's a large area. It's diverse in its geography, demography, and natural resources. We listed a few of the things that happen in the way of resources and geography and different elements like tourism, etc. in the region. So we're large, we're diverse in population, and we are diverse in what goes on. Next slide is a little more specifics about the northern region. We're the largest region in the state. We have the lowest population, low population. We have more miles than any other, road miles than any other region. And we have lots of rural airports, mostly gravel airports. We have 6 certified airports: Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow, Valdez, Cordova, Dead Horse. Those are scattered throughout the region. Our low population and diverse area make for long driving distances. We don't have the traffic, the ADT that other central region has. Therefore, we don't have the same accident rate, that sort of thing that the other regions have, and that reflects in some of the funding that we get. And the rural roads are needed to support the economic development, not only just for the communities they serve, but for people like Anchorage. I mean, there's ports of Anchorage, Valdez, and Cordova, as Fairbanks as a hub. They are served by these rural roads. We got to get goods and services to these communities, and so there's a lot going on. Northern Region strategy. You know, everybody wants to know about a plan. You know, we always have a plan for doing stuff, and of course, you know, this list of strategies used as a backdrop for the planning and programming for projects that we work on. They're different, given the different types of and amounts of funding sources. So there's how the different projects fit into different categories of what we're trying to accomplish. Pavement, you've heard in other presentations, weight restriction issues on the Parks Highway. That's one of the areas that we're working on in projects. Pavement preservation, we're working on that in Alaska, in the Parks Highway, in the Alaska Highway area. Of course, bridges is a big thing. We've got a current big project in Tana River Bridge replacing that. We just finished the Washington Creek Bridge outside of town, and we're hoping to get funded on Snake River Bridge in Nome for fixing that as well. We got some congestion issues in the Fairbanks area, and some facility upgrades with our Shrebs and Jim River. We're looking for capital funding for that, and it looks like it's in the budget. And we have some Shrebs, and I was out to one rural airport where one of these Shrebs, and that's a snow removal equipment building, and it was actually just sinking into the ground. So, well, that's a deferred maintenance issue, and there are some problems there that we're trying to work on. We do realize that the motoring public is our client, and we do the best we can to serve those folks and meet their needs. And sometimes you read in the paper, we don't necessarily get there, but I can tell you it's not for lack of trying. Northern Region challenges. In the way of severe climate impacts. And in the northern region, we go from no permafrost areas to discontinuous permafrost areas to continuous permafrost areas. We've got a lot of lane miles of roads in those types of areas, and they all come with different challenges and engineering challenges, construction challenges, and there's a few examples of some highway stress and settlement, typical settlement things, and we also have some in environmental challenges, extreme weather challenges. This winter, we experienced a little cold weather, which was a little more like Fairbanks of old or Interior of old. You know, it was 60 plus below in Tok, I think, and so we can go from 60 below to 90 above, not in the same day, but winter, summer, potentially, and those all impact the roads and airports in that specific locale, and some of the results of those climate changes are high construction and maintenance costs. When you have subsidence in your roads, you have to get out and fix them. It'll be in a little more, a few more examples of climate impacts. We've got the climate, we've got permafrost, we've got dust control, we've got snow removal, which is avalanche areas in Thompson Pass and in Attigan Pass on the Dalton Highway. We get wildfires. I don't know if any other regions get too many wildfires, but they do. We get fires that come right up to our roads. And a few years ago, they were pretty close to town, and that caused some people some stress, that's for sure. And what happens with wildfires, you have a fire, then you have a rain event, you have erosion, and so we have some problems with our embankments and that sort of thing. And I wasn't as aware of natural disasters to the transportation infrastructure until I came to the DOT storm events on the coast out in the western Alaska, rain events in our southeastern sort of part of our district in the Valdez area in October of 06, and we got a couple of pictures in the presentation about those. But they all cause some problems, and the potential damage to airports and sanitation roads and evac roads in some of our remote areas is concerning. River communities are subject to floods. And their transportation infrastructures are impacted. The ability to get to an airport is a problem. Dust control. We have dust is a health issue in many of the communities. It's becoming more and more of a problem. EPA is getting involved in it, and a number of folks are working that issue to include the Denali Commission and the DOT as well, and we've included a lot of dust control even in our current projects. We do it on the Dalton Highway all the time, not the entire highway, but in segments, and we're constantly trying to control the dust with the cooperation with the communities. Next slide kind of gives you a little more perspective. I know last week that the ATA and Mr. Reeves were here, and they talked. The ATA talked a bit about the Dalton Highway and how important it was. Mr. Reeves spoke to the importance and the economic importance of the Dalton Highway as it relates to a gas pipeline. Well, it's our job to maintain the Dalton Highway. And we do that, and it's a large task. It's a large part of the budget. It's a large part of what we do. The Dalton Highway is now was completed in 1975, and the state took over in 1978. And I think most of us understand that it was built to support the pipeline, and that was it was built to secondary road standards, which was meant slower speeds, narrower road, narrower driving surfaces, narrower shoulders, and could have steeper hills. The grade could be steeper than your primary road standards. It goes through a varied geographical conditions. I mean, from live and good country to all the way to Dead Horse, you go through mountains, you go through coastal plains and river plains, river out areas where you have lots of gravel. And of course, it crosses the Arctic Circle. Now you get into continuous permafrost, that causes some problems. And we maintain that through workforces that are stationed at 7 maintenance camps, and you can see them on the diagram from Live and Good to Dead Horse. A few more things about the Dalton Highway. It's about a little over 400 miles long. It has very heavy truck traffic. It is open to the public, and the trips I've been on the Dalton, I've seen bikers, I've seen runners, I've seen bikers, meaning bicycles and motorcycles. You get all kinds of different kind of traffic on that. If you ever have the opportunity to make the trip down the Dalton Highway, I would recommend it. It's very interesting. And the recreational travel of just RVs and people out sightseeing has increased substantial over time. Now, there's the projection of a gas line impact. It will be the transportation route to get materials and people and pipe up the North Slope. We estimate there's going to be about 34,000 one-way loads, so that's a pipe going up, maybe an empty truck coming back. So there's going to be at least 34,000 one-way trips just for the pieces of pipe. There should be in the neighborhood of 200 plus just loads in support. So you can imagine that's a lot of traffic that goes over the Hall Road. The legislature has provided capital appropriations in prior years to do widening and resurfacing. We want to thank you folks for that, and hope that you continue doing that, because we continue to have resurfacing and culvert issues and that sort of thing. The pipeline traffic with the load counts that we're projecting is going to have a huge effect and impact on the road and our ability to maintain it. So it's right now it's about 70% of the road is about 28 foot wide, and the bullet over here is 30% that's reconstructed 32 foot wide. So that's in our strategies of trying to increase our road standards. And we talk about 14 million cubic yards of resurfacing to maintain required over the next 50 years. So that kind of intrigued me, being an engineer. I wanted to give how big a pile is 14 million cubic yards? Well, if you imagine a Rubik's Cube, that's 720 feet, 25 feet in each direction. That box encompasses about 14 million cubic yards. If that doesn't do it, it's about 2.5 football fields going each way. So that's a pretty good pile of material, which we have to buy, put down, blade, and compact. So that gives you a little idea of some of the issues we run into. And it's in an annual operating budget for the Hall Road, not including the capital appropriation we get for resurfacing, is in the $10 to $12 million a year. So issues, I mentioned a number of them already. With heavy truck traffic, we lose the trucks, they you know, dust control. We do dust control on the parks, in Dalton, but as they travel the road, we lose dust. It's a fine material. It blows away. We have to, the surface then becomes like marbles. It doesn't bind, doesn't tighten up, and rolls into the off into the ditches, so we have some problems there. And just getting material source sites is an issue. We have some problems in that area, but with the funding we hope to get through capital and maybe through the general obligation bond, we can do some stockpiling material so we can have that material when we need it to be more efficient in our maintenance of the highway. Needs. I think you heard that there are lots of needs through Mr. Reeves, but just some of the issues that we've had. In 2005, general fund appropriation, from the legislature, we rebuilt the Chandler maintenance camp. It was a nice addition. Received capital appropriations for repair in 05, 06, and 07. Currently, there's in the general obligation bond, there's $14 million for improvements. Dalton resurfacing and Jim River maintenance shop to replace that maintenance station, which is having some real problems with its foundation and that sort of thing. And of course, I believe you folks have been talked to about the RISE report, and it has lots of future needs for the gas pipeline. But projects currently in the funding program are listed there, and the Yukon River Bridge redecking and Dalton 3749 both were completed last summer. So those are two projects that were completed, and this intermodal project will be worked on this coming summer. Funding and needs. It's no secret. You folks know costs and needs are increasing. Our funding is not keeping up with that, so there is a funding gap. How do you reconcile that? The lower cartoon just is provided for information that many of the other states, like 78% of them, are having a general fund program, so they don't rely so much on the federal dollars. And I know Jeff Otteson has been here to give you information about STIP and that sort of thing. To show that it's a declining, the trust fund is a declining revenue. Less funding, results in fewer projects and splitting projects up so that they can into smaller projects, phasing them so we can get to them. And this horizontal work of airports, roads, and bridges is just expensive work. It's just very expensive work, and it takes some money. Next, general funds. I wanted to provide a slide that showed you that this is a trend of the general fund that we've gotten in the past, and you can see that it's the slope is declining. I'm very hopeful that we'll be successful in the capital appropriation process, well, the GO process this year. And this next slide is I think you've probably all seen this too, but I just wanted to put it in to show that general fund dollars, we can cut the life and tenure of a project in half, just about, because we can do many of the tasks in design in parallel, and that's what you see in the red. The blue is the events and tasks we have to do for a project under a federal project, and they become series events, so that it does save us time. We can get the project on the street quicker, and it saves in the budget because we're not losing inflation on a yearly basis. Northern region has, there's a needs list that was started about 15 years ago, and so we thought, well, we'll display the needs as we see that, and this list that we keep track of, and of the different needs in the region. And you know, there's a slide there that says we're up in the, you know, funded all the needs, and that does, that probably includes the wants too. There's a difference, of course, between needs and wants, but that's in the $4.7 billion range. And obviously, with the amount of capital funding we're getting, we're not eating it, eroding that list real fast. And here's some information about the next slide is about construction, cost of construction. There's some graphs there. It talks about asphalt, indicates the how we compare to national highway construction. And we're almost as twice as much as the national average. Our asphalt is petroleum product. Petroleum products aren't cheap, and I don't know that they're going to get a whole lot cheaper. Airports.
Excuse me, Steve. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, before we move on to airports, you had indicated there was a problem with materials. And I know that we're dealing with a lot of federal land. Have we contacted the federal pipeline coordinator to see if they can assist us in any way to gaining access to potential materials on federal land in some of those areas where we have long stretches of federal land? I would think that as part of their job was to expedite, if we could convince them that building this is important to the pipeline, that they have a congressional mandate to assist us. So I'm wondering if we've reached out to the federal pipeline coordinator to see if there's any way we can get access quickly to federal lands along the highway for materials.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, to my knowledge, we haven't this time. I mean, the new pipeline and the corridor and all that stuff is coming on pretty fast, but I'm sure that we will and can do that as things start to develop. Thank you for that suggestion.
I guess my question would be why, Mr. Chairman, if
sure,
I could.
Sure.
We have needs now that we're trying to implement to build a pipeline, and part of that's upgrading the Dalton. I would think that would be, is there a inventory of those materials on federal lands that we could use?
I'm going to have to ask Mr. Thies if he knows of that.
Chair, Mr. Johnson, yes, there is. In fact, we're working on some of those sites on a regular basis. The BLM and the Corps to try to get to those sites. We got about four or five sites now from Chandler north that you wouldn't attribute any of this. We're working on those right now.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, before I have to leave, I would think that a call to the federal pipeline coordinator to talk to BLM and make a call from higher up might be appropriate to start greasing some of the skids to get access to some of those other inventory sites that we may or may not be looking at right now, all the way up and down the highway. And a lot of we pass through an awful lot of federal land, and they own an awful lot of the materials. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good, very good suggestion. Thank you.
Go ahead.
What? Okay. Airports. Way back in our previous slide, we talked about we have about 103 airports in the region. Most of them are rural airports. We got six certificated airports. I mentioned that. And airports are like the roads. They have all the same problems with the geography and the freeze-thaw issues, the dust issues, and resurfacing issues. So they're not invincible to the environment. And they are the lifeline for all those communities, for medevacs and bypass mail and just transportation in and out. It is their transportation corridor to the hubs. We have about approximately 60% of those airports are under contract for snow removal and minor maintenance by people within the communities. The others are maintained by DOT. They're closer to the road system, so we can get to them. And We contract with folks with very little experience. They're the only ones there on heavy equipment. We have training programs to try to get them involved and to train them up. But we do have a need for training in the villages for those folks on heavy equipment. And of course, skyrocketing fuel and electric costs are always a problem. And when you start doing maintenance, you're running equipment, you're needing fuel. So those things. And we're not without security issues at our certificated airports as well as some other areas. Moving on, maintenance and operation. There's a number of folks. Gives you some. There's some stats there about the number of employees and the seasonal employees and number of maintenance districts and et cetera. And there's a slide that shows you the type of operating dollars we get and compared to what the need would be. And there's a difference. We're still trying to. We're doing the very best we can, as I say, with the money that we're getting. And just the folks in maintenance are, you know, unsung heroes. I think of our business. An organization, an example of a couple weeks ago, we had about 50 below and 60 mile an hour winds up on Eagle Summit Country. Our guys closed the road down, and then the next morning, and that was in conflict, starting to be in conflict with the Quest. That was a bit of a problem because the dogs couldn't get around, and so the next morning they showed up at 6 a.m. and worked, I think, till 6 p.m. that night to open it up and make sure that all the folks got through, the dogs and their handlers and that sort of thing. And I was curious, you know, I didn't look, I don't have my windshield chart handy, but I did go out and look it up. But at 50 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 50, and 60 mile an hour wind is about 120 below. So we had our guys out there working in that, and at 120 below, exposed flesh will frostbite in 5 minutes or less. So they went out, did their job. They deal with the earthquakes, floods, fires, avalanches, and their normal maintenance. And I know when they're out there doing maintenance in crack seal and overlays, they're dealing with lots of mosquitoes as well out there on the roads, rural areas. There's a graphic to show what the northern region proposed GO bonds, the three projects that are in the general obligation bond are shown there. Talked a bit about most of those already. Significant projects and accomplishments. A few nice pictures to show. These are some of the things that we do with the money that we're given. And actually, in North Pole, there's one more roundabout. Didn't quite get in the picture, but there's three of them in a row there. The city is really pleased with those. We even had candy stripe streetlight poles to meet the theme of the city. So lastly, what can you do for us? You know, we're I think the transportation infrastructure is in need of a general fund transportation plan. How to get there is up to you folks. So would solicit your support in a program of that nature. And I know it's being talked about in other areas. Increased M&O budgets. We're having our budgets for operating budgets aren't quite enough to do what we need to do. So when you have an opportunity to help us in that area, that would be appreciated. And and of course, support the CIP projects that we have, as well as projects that would potentially support the gas pipeline, the transportation infrastructure that would support the pipeline. And of course, last is some contact information. And here's one of those M&O guys that I was talking about. October 06, we had a flood down by Valdez, and that was before I was a regional director. They worked, Mr. Mike Coffey may have testified for you folks before, but he was heavily involved in that at that time, and it was quite impressive to see what those folks got done. And if you go to the very, very beginning of our presentation, there is a picture of the same slide 2, paving at 0. That's also in the Keystone Canyon where they were finishing up and they were putting down pavement in 0 degrees. And they tell me that that piece of pavement is still in pretty good shape.
Good. Any questions for Steve, Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, we've had a couple of people testify about the need for work on the Dalton Highway. And as I was sitting here looking at the map you've got here on slide 8, it occurred to me to ask, when we're talking about the Dalton Highway, are we talking exclusively about the part that's officially the Dalton Highway, or are we talking about all the highway north of Fairbanks that needs upgrade there?
Well, the Dalton Highway is the red on slide 8, but we're responsible for the road from Fairbanks, well, from mile 163 on the parks all the way to Dead Horse. So if you're imagining a load coming out of Anchorage, mm-hmm. it's got to go all the way up. So that area between Fairbanks and Livewood, of course, we're responsible for that as well. It doesn't have the maintenance needs in most of that area that the other parts of the Dalton has.
And it doesn't have the reconstruction needs either. I mean, it's up to a regular highway standard there.
Not all of it.
Not all of it. So we may be talking about having to do some work on it as well in conjunction with the gas pipeline. Is that?
I believe that to be. We're going. That's an interesting question, because when is the pipeline going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, if it happens tomorrow, that's one thing. If it happens 20 years from now, that's another. So that's going to be interesting. But yes, there are needs in that section from Fairbanks to Livengood, and Livengood to that other stretch there.
Right.
Actually, the worst part of the road is from roughly from Livengood to mile 37 or so. I think we just redid 37 to 49 mile.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Faircloth, anything?
Is Northern Region responsible for any ports? So you do have some coast, but I didn't know if you have
through
ports.
The chair, Representative Faircloth, we don't have any ports. I mean, we have facilities in Valdez and Cordova, but not ports as say. Fortunately, we just have the highways and aviation and facilities in the Northern Region.
Mr. Chairman, seeing that Steve is at the end of our quest for information, he's getting off a little bit easier than his counterparts did. So, you know, I'm not sure if we want to try to cook up some really difficult questions for him.
We can call him back anytime.
I think we're doing that with Marine Highways, Mr.
We
Chairman.
We are indeed. Looking forward to that.
Chair, I would be glad to come back if you want to, at any time.
Imagine. Representative Dugan?
Mr. Chairman, as you may have heard from before the meeting, Mr. Titus and I have known each other since we were Little League baseball players, and my advice to him yesterday was just to hunker down behind Marine Highways and nothing too bad would come his way.
Yeah, he drew the long straw. Representative Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, Steve, we did have Representative Salmon is not here today, but we did have an issue come before the committee that we've passed through looking at a river ferry system, and I was wondering if Northern Region had any comments on that as far as prioritizing it and how that would address transportation needs to some of those river communities.
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I did try to do some research on that. The river ferry system, there was some small study done years ago with regard to that, and it's of course it's dropped totally off anybody's radar, and I had to go back and get into the planning files just to find that information out, and it hasn't come forward, so I can't offer you much in the way of new information on that. I could provide you with the old information, but
Mr. Chairman, legislation's already been through this committee on that issue, so is that my recollection correct?
That is correct.
It is correct.
We've passed that out, so you might want to take a look at what Representative Salmon is proposing as access for his community. And as we look at marine highways and the ferry system, we're looking at coastal communities and the equity of the road system versus ferry and their transportation needs. I'm certainly not advocating for river ferry service. I believe I put no recommendation on that particular piece of legislation because I think that long-term, the life cycle of our investment will be challenged with the benefit to the region and how we can support that long-term. So I just am looking for prioritization in Northern Region as that piece of legislation makes its way forward.
Thank you. Anything else? Steve, I'd like to thank you for coming and letting us know what's going on. And also, Howard, we saw, especially in your region, the challenges on your guys in the field, and we really appreciate the hard work that you and your crews deal with up there in the great north edge of the state. We're just covered with water all the time down here, but you know, a pair of extra tufts and you'll be all right. But you guys really have great challenges, and I know that folks on this committee truly appreciate the people in the field and how hard they work and your guidance for that. So thank you both for coming. If there's nothing else before the committee, Representative Fairclough.
Well, I know Howard from a little bit different life also, and I was wondering if he wanted to give us an update on any motorized sled dog races.
No.
He does not want to. He's been an avid supporter of...
I'll give you one to the chair that we were last weekend. Of course, we got to watch the Cutter's husband come into the Iron Dog, and she kept asking me where he was at. Finally, pulled him across the finish line at the end of the fourth place. So, and I found out he did with a broken right arm.
He does.
He came 500 miles with a broken right arm all the way from Galena to Fairbanks. So that's quite a salute to the guy that took it fourth place.
Thank you for that. I just know that many people are watching the Iron Dog and other events that are coming up before our state, so I appreciate that update, Howard. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else before the committee? We'll adjourn at 1:45.